We are very grateful here at the In the Money Media Network to acknowledge our partners, Keeneland and Keeneland Select. There is currently a very lucrative promotion for new signups at Keeneland Select. Sign up for a new Keeneland Select account and deposit $200. Wager $400 by May 3rd and receive your initial $200 back plus a $100 sign-up bonus. Terms and conditions do apply. At the moment, anyone who signs up for a new account is eligible for this. You don't need a promo code for the moment. If there are any issues, feel free to reach out to us. I'm at Looms Boldly, or contact at Keeneland on Twitter. Feel free also to go to inthemoneypodcast.com and drop me a line if there are any issues, but everything should be smoothed out. This is a great way to not only get some extra money on your bankroll, but also to help us out. Anytime you support one of our partners, you're supporting us, and we appreciate it immensely. For more information, go to KeenelandSelect.com. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast, sponsored by Keeneland Select. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again. Where else would I be? Happy to be looking back at a very fun weekend of racing last weekend at Gulfstream and Oaklawn Park, looking ahead a little bit to what we still have going on here and also answering some questions. Speaking of questions, I want to put this in right at the top. Our voicemail hotline number. We're getting ready to do another voicemail hotline show, and we want you all to participate. The number to call, 732-893-7155. Leave us a voicemail on there. We'll get to as many as we can. If you've emailed me a question, I have a feeling a few things have gotten lost in the shuffle lately. Feel free to either bump an email you sent me in the past and or just go ahead and leave your question as a voicemail. That number, I'll hit it one more time. I know you could just hit the 15-second back button, but I'll make it easy on you. 732-893-7155. And to do the rest of this show with me, I'm going to bring in a man who now has his own podcast that's getting a lot of positive attention. I have them both queued up and ready to check out on my... I'm sort of like a prisoner. I get my 1 hour's exercise, and the rest of the time I'm remanded to my bunker. But at the top of the list of things I want to listen to have been recorded and posted by this man coming to you from the planet Texas. Where else would he be? He's the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
My favorite part of the 2 hour episode I recorded with Michael McCarthy is in the first 15 seconds I make fun of you.
The only time?
No, I get you at the beginning and the end of every episode because I mock you a little bit because I didn't come up with my own stuff. So I just kind of mock you.
You're allowed to do that. That's only fair. You've really you've come through in the clutch. At this time, putting together a new and exciting program that everybody's talking about. I mean, we've had international interest, people from all over the world tuning in and checking this show out. So if the price I have to pay to get you doing such good work is to be a little bit of a punching bag, so be it. I can accept that. How was your time on TV last week?
It was good. We're trying to think what happened last week. What happened? We have anything fun happen? It was only one day. We did 2 days last week, and I can't remember.
Isn't it all a blur? It's insane.
It is. But you know what, though? I don't know how everyone else's life is going. It's flying for me. I mean, it's absolutely flying. I get done on Sunday after the show. I got this delicious pizza to go thing and like came home, and like it's like practically Thursday in my brain. I mean, it's obviously Wednesday, but it's practically Thursday, and before you know it, I'm back there Saturday. We're going again. It's flying by for me. I'm sure it's not for others, but it is for me.
Keeping busy is part of that. It's weird because on one hand, I just feel like we're in our own – it's sort of, you know, I'll just go ahead and say it. It's sort of acid trip-like where it's – everything at once and nothing at all. It's like the relationship to time itself has shifted, JK, where sometimes it feels completely endless, and other times it just feels like everything's absolutely zipping by. So, you know, we're doing what we can here. And it has been great to have racing. I mean, I'll just say that again. I really appreciate the places who've been able to figure out how to navigate the waters and run safely, because it does add structure. I said something on Twitter today that was 100% sincere, that people took me like I was joking. Richard Grunder's voice has become a major source of comfort to me. I enjoy hearing it, and I enjoy the distraction that it brings. And, you know, folks are saying cheeky things about, you know, the accuracy or whatever. And you know what? I'm sorry, but whether you're talking about baseball or you're talking about race callers, what's great about them is there's a panoply of things you could choose from, right? It's not me saying I love Grunder, which I do, is not, oh, he's the most accurate and best race caller, and I wish he called the Breeders' Cup on NBC. It's he creates this vibe that right now, especially, just fills me with comfort, because it's just these nice 8 races of distraction every day that Tampa Bay runs. What do you think about my view of Mr. Richard Grunder?
Well, look, his voice is always soothing to me, because one of my fondest moments in high school was me and my buddy Robert Chow. We used to go to Dave and Buster's for a reverse happy hour, which is confusing, but it's like just later. It's at like lunch and it late and later. It's like not at the normal happy hour time.
Gotcha. It's reverse. It's play.
We would play this game, Derby Owners Club.
Oh, sure.
And his voice was in Derby Owners Club. So every time I hear him, I feel like I'm sitting there with a Dos Equis and $48 in my bank account, where 20 of them were being spent on playing this game. And so it's a sense of comfort for me. But I know what you're saying. It's just like just knowing that you have that distraction every day, knowing that distraction is there if you want it. And Monday and Tuesday racing was where I think where most of us used to take off. And now there's Monday and Tuesday options. And because everyone's home and everyone's looking for a distraction, you know, you have an opportunity to be distracted. You know, we used to call a friend of mine, his nickname is Hash. He came up with a beautiful phrase during football season. He calls Tuesdays soul searching Tuesday, because there's no sports during football season. You know, you get football Saturday, Sunday, you get Monday night football. Then you start getting that janky game on Wednesday. You got Thursday night football, Friday night football. It's like Tuesday's that day where you search for your soul and try to figure out. So he calls it soul searching Tuesdays. We don't really have those anymore, because, you know, every day soul searching, or every day you're busy.
And there is racing every day, which is good. Two other little points on that. I do liken it to baseball announcers, where, you know, I grew up listening to Phil Rizzuto, who technically was not a very good baseball announcer. However, unbelievable sense of comfort and entertainment and vibe that he created. So he might not have technically been good. He's, you know, missing what's going on, missing the great play the shortstop made because he's talking about the clams he ate the night before. But at the same time, it's just fantastic. It was fantastic to listen to, and I miss Rizzuto terribly. And, you know, I think for people in Chicago and people who watched WGN, Harry Carey, very, very similar vibe. Like, you don't have to be Howie Rose, you know, technically perfect and also creating a great vibe. Like, not everybody can be held to, like, that grade one Hall of Fame broadcaster level to be a broadcaster who's terrific and who connects with people. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And while we're talking about some of these tracks racing earlier in the week, JK, we should address this dead heat rainbow situation, because I know I have a strong opinion about it, and I would imagine you do too.
No, I do. I had one of my friends who often called me with devil's advocate arguments, and I wanted to punch him for a second and a half, but it's like his favorite thing to do is devil's advocate argument.
We need but to you're always devil's you with the punching. Advocating. Now that I'm a grade school teacher, you with the punching, JK. We've got to broaden your palette of conflict resolution skills.
And the thing is, I haven't punched anyone. I have not punched anyone. Serious. I'm dead serious. When was the last time I punched someone? It was
You didn't get McFarlane on Derby Day a few years ago.
No, he didn't. He didn't want that. 2000 and maybe one or two or something. Did I ever tell you my favorite part about that whole situation?
I don't think so. Please.
I was with, he had a large fellow with him that got in between us and like kind of really bucked up to me because I'm not the
player,
largest man.
Football player type?
No, he looked like a football player. I don't think he was. He's just a big man.
I was just trying to help you with the description.
And then I was with Rashard Lewis, and Rashard pushed me out of the way and stepped in front of me. And then his big guy melted like soft butter to my big guy. He's like, no, man. Oh, no, man. It was very funny.
Anyways, Mr. Lewis, so, can I have an autograph of that kind of vibe?
Yeah. No, so I haven't punched anyone since literally 2001 or two, probably. No, but so my point is that situation to me.
Let's recap it very quickly for people who have been under a rock. It was one of these rainbow situations where one person had the ticket. This was at Remington Park. Yes, JK? Help me with that at least. And there was one winner, but in one of the races, there was a dead heat. And this player, whose name is escaping me, though it is out there in the world, had both of those horses. There was one winning combination. The guy had it. I don't even see how they could think about not paying him, but they didn't want him.
Yeah, I mean, look. Pat Cummings did a lot of work on it. The Thoroughbred Idea Foundation covered it. So if you want to know more details, you want facts, you go there. You come here, you get we're going to just tell you how we feel, and we might be inaccurate about some facts. Here's what I do know is that they say single ticket, unique ticket, but other jurisdictions, from what I understand, are explicit in covering the dead heat. The Oklahoma rules do not explicitly cover the dead heat, and they're just saying that it wasn't a unique ticket. Well, okay, it wasn't a unique ticket because there could have been two winning tickets, but there wasn't. There was one ticket that was a winner. It wasn't that scratch situation where a horse scratches and you get the post-time favorite and then suddenly now there's, two and blah. It wasn't that. Look, a racetrack official that we all respect and everyone who listens to this show that knows this person respects him as well, texted me and said, I can't tweet this, but you can. And he said, what they need to do is write a check to the guy. I think his name was Jeff. I could be wrong about that. Write a check to him and from their own account, and then keep the jackpot rolling. He gets paid. They change the rule. They keep their nasty jackpot rolling to keep sucking in poor people that don't know what they're doing. And here we go, right? Everyone's happy.
Great solution. And the marketing benefit you'd get from that would be tremendous. I mean, I'd feel obligated almost to play the damn thing, at least on a force out day, as a show of respect to doing the right thing.
Easily enough, I have a running boycott against Oklahoma as a state anyway, right? I mean, they have the Sooners. They're unfairly mad at Kevin Durant for getting the heck out of there and moving to San Francisco and winning championships.
Oh, goodness.
So,
he just I'm wants just to be on the side that's Oklahoma, winning.
If you're from Oklahoma, I like you, but I don't like the Sooners. They're awful. They're awful. When I was in college, we went to, and I'm sure Texas fans are bad too. I went to four in a row, and we lost all four at the Cotton Bowl, and I swore I would never go again because you don't just get to leave with the frustration of losing. You leave with the frustration of losing and 100,000 people in crimson and white rubbing it in your face. It's the worst. The worst.
What is happening with this story? It's being adjudicated somewhere? I mean, it's not a done. They don't want to pay, but the commission made them withhold the money and it's being looked at. What's the latest?
You know, last I looked, it was paused. They canceled the wager like the day of the wager at one point, and I haven't seen what's happened since then. I'm assuming that they probably received a letter from a lawyer that said, hey, we're going to have to talk about this. Yep. So they had to take the money out and cancel the event. That's the last I saw of it, that there was a little bit of a pause. I think what we see here is April 17th, effective immediately, Sooner 6 wager. has been suspended until further notice. Per the Oklahoma Horse Racing Commission, all wagers on the Sooner Six for Friday's racing will be refunded. And then Pat Cummings said, really good first step here. If the commission decides they must pay that man his money, then Remington would have $11,000 in a new jackpot to start with. I'm hopeful, but nowhere close to done. Let's go OHRC.
All right. Good stuff. Good recap. Let me just hear this, though. What was the devil's advocate case about it? I would agree if the rules were written differently, there might be a very good legalistic case for what they did. But as vaguely as the rules were written, from my peek at them, they don't really have a toe to stand on and really need to back up.
Devil's advocate is unique ticket, single ticket winner. And the argument is, so then it becomes a debate, is what is a single ticket? What is a unique ticket? To me, it's not black and white in the game of pari-mutuel wagering when you could have multiple horses in a leg. The part to me that I can never get over is that, let's just pretend it's the 5 and the 10. I think that might be actually right. But if the 5 wins, he wins the jackpot. If the 10 wins, he wins the jackpot. They both dead heat. And he doesn't.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
My brain won't process that.
You can't accept that. And again, if the dead heat was expressly addressed and they had that to stand on, that would be something. But in this case,
that would be gross too, though, because, you know, those photos, every time you have a dead heat, you're like, what? Are you sure? Remember that dead heat in Saratoga? Can you imagine if it happened then?
I had a guy tell me who did, I won't say the track because I don't want anybody tracking him down, but a guy whose job was to do the photos, tell me that there's always a winner in a dead heat if you zoom in enough, which I thought was pretty, isn't that amazing? That it's like, ooh. It's very yucky. I mean, you just have to accept what magnification you're going to go with and then call that a dead heat, I guess. But I thought it was a good point, actually, if you're getting down to, you know, the molecular level here. All right, what do we want to go next? Let's talk about some racing from last weekend. I know it's Wednesday, so it doesn't exactly seem like the freshest stuff to recap, but I think there's some more evergreen points and interesting points going forward we can talk to. But let's start off with a quick plug, JK, for the show you dropped yesterday with Michael McCarthy, the trainer of CC, now multiple grade one winner who annexed the Apple Blossom with a 98 buyer speed figure. You sound like you're pretty happy. You're feeling yourself a little bit for the show.
Well, I'm feeling the show, not myself. The show is funny, man. It's good. I put a preview up, and I'm not kidding you, of the fourth best story in the podcast, maybe the fifth best story that we had. The preview that I put up was a story about a horse from Team Valor when Michael was working for Todd, and the horse was a little horse. And essentially, if you've been to a racetrack, you've been to a barn, Pete, you'll be able to visualize this. The horse is on the shed row going in a circle, and he was being kind of naughty, and he started backing up, and he kept backing up, and he kept backing up, and he put himself in the office. And he literally ended up in the office, trapped an exercise rider in there. Oh, no. TVs are falling down. Oh, the exercise rider's trying to kick out the portable air conditioning thing so he can escape. And they had to try to get this horse out of the office.
Oh,
so,
my God.
That was fun. Anyways, he tells a bunch of good stories. I find out the clarification on his name, which was huge for me. If you've been to the racetrack, everyone calls him Whitey, and I was like, geez, can I be friends with this guy? I don't.
So, you were worried it some sort of deep-held, occultish political allegiance, perhaps.
So they, you know, he explains that, where that came from. It was a lot of fun, man. And you know, this show in my brain was meant to be a show that was not the typical question. What was it like working for Todd Pletcher? Gary Stevens, how was it sitting on Beholder's back? I get why people ask those questions, but we've all heard the answers to them. So it's not really engaging anymore. Mike Smith, how did you feel when you got beat on Zenyatta? Like, that's great, but I wanted to try to have other conversations, more in-depth conversations, and let you know these people personally. And that was the original thought, and I think it still has that, but it also has kind of turned into just like story time, where guys are telling stories that you and I have experienced, stories being told. And it's just the greatest thing to like listen to these guys tell behind the scenes stories. And so I'm proud of it. It's entertaining. A real big thank you to John Panagot, Jacob West, and Jonathan Thomas, who I sent text messages to get some ideas for stories to ask.
Oh, that's great.
They gave me about 40, and 29 of them, they weren't safe for HBO. So there's 11 I could use, but it was a lot of fun, man. I'm looking forward to next week. I don't know where I'm going to go next week. I've got a short list.
When you mentioned
Marshall Graham, yeah, maybe a Matisse brother.
Yeah. Horse player, horse player, because when you mentioned story time, that's a concept that I've been toying with doing. If I had time, I'd be doing so much better broadcasting if I wasn't educating 6 hours a day, by the way. But the idea of sort of an old school horse player story time, the way I was thinking of doing it was just to reach out to a bunch of people and just get like 6 or 8 people doing their best one. And maybe we will do that at some point, or maybe you can even steal that and do a long form with 6 or 8 guests. But to get some of the old school horse player stories, and as obviously Marshall would be great, and it's Arkansas Derby week, and I'd never say no to that. But, you know, how about you get somebody, I mean, somebody like Paul, who, you know, sort of caught the tail end of the gimmick chasing traveling days and the education stories from racing out west, and then the stories of going out to Vegas in the early days of rebates. That might be the one.
And here's the thing, is I'm torn between I'm hoping this is going to go on for a while. So I think the way I want to do it is I want to get Paul individually one time. I want to get Duke individually one time. And then I want to get them together. I don't want to get them together first.
I think you have I like what you're thinking. And just to clarify, this go on for a while. You are referring to your new podcast, not the pandemic.
Yeah, no, not the pandemic, the podcast. Yeah, I need this to be over ASAP.
We're doing our best. Talk about CC. I was very impressed. I mean, it was a great trip. It's a hard race to talk about without talking about the other personal interest you had in this race and Serengeti Empress, and what I thought was a very unusual, it seemed like a tactical decision by Joe Talamo that seemed to go against trainer's orders that might have changed the entire complexion of this race. But I mean, CC obviously, it was Espinoza worked out a great trip and she got the money.
Funny enough, I had a panic attack yesterday in the middle of the podcast I was recording with Michael McCarthy. He misspoke and said that Florent Giroux was on cookie dough. And on the Fox show, which I'm telling this story because it leads to something else, I kind of took a little bit of a shot at the rider of cookie dough. And I know this is going to probably annoy people, but just deal with it. Like, I don't know Abel Cedillo or anyone who is involved with him, and so I don't mind taking a shot at him. If it was like, but Doug Bradar is my friend, and Florent Giroux has been nice to me in times we've met, and if he did something I didn't agree with, there's no equity in me burying him on national television.
You'd sugarcoat it a little if you talked about it.
I just wouldn't even
all
address it. I'm just not going to be mean to my friends on national television.
Well, you're just
and
being
if
honest.
You call me like a fake for that. Like, that's fine. I don't care. I'm not going to be mean to my friends on TV. And so he said that Flo was on the horse, and I panicked that there was a trainer, like a change. And I was like, I sent myself an email, call Doug. Because I was going to call Doug and just be like, dude, I'm so sorry for doing that. I didn't mean to make you guys look bad. But it wasn't even Flo. It was Abel Cedillo. So yes. I'm back to burying him.
Poor Abel Cedillo.
Well, I just thought the ride was terrible. I think when you take a horse that has no shot that ends up finishing last, and I don't mind you race riding if you're trying to win and you're race riding, but if you're just kamikaze race riding, I think it's despicable and it's aggravating to me. And so on the Fox show, I said that.
What race riding did you see from Cedillo? Explain that. I mean, I know the horse showed speed sort of unexpectedly.
Yeah, he showed speed, and then he stayed in like the 5 path until the turn. And then he had to come in a little bit, and he came to like the 3 path. And then he just would not let – he knew Serengeti Empress was going to try to clear. He knew that's what she was going to do. And he just never was going to let her do that, when that gave him, but the way that he prevented her from doing that was never going to allow him to win.
That's the way they used to ride all the time. Guys like Angel and Jerry Bailey, they would be like, I'm assuming from watching them ride for so long that this was the mentality. I'm going to win. If I'm not going to win, I'm going to beat the favorite. It seemed, that used to be a thing.
I mean, I get it. I wasn't as in tune for Smarty Jones, but I've heard you say a million times how many horses made runs at Smarty Jones when he lost the Belmont.
At their own expense, yeah. I mean, I believe right. that. I mean, Eddington and Bailey being the prime example.
And look, I'll be honest with you. This whole thing with the Tom thing and the Surrogate Empress thing, it's getting a little awkward because Tom is so stinking nice to me, and I feel so bad that I'm rooting against the most important filly he's ever had. It's like the worst feeling in the world.
He's out for life. He's out for life on Surrogate Empress, and you didn't know him at the time, so you don't need to worry about it.
I feel Believe. So bad.
Anyway. And you cop to it, which I appreciate. I mean, you know, so I think that was class of you to cop to it.
I wouldn't tell this story anywhere but here because this is like our little safe place, but Tom Tech called me after and said, man, I really appreciate you saying that because I was frustrated and I couldn't say anything.
Right.
You know, it just looks like sour grapes if he says it.
That's right. But you don't think Talamo could have cleared? So you think it was more, of those tactics. I thought Talamo made the decision not to clear. I thought he just had like a little bit of a maybe brain freeze or something and forgot the plan.
No, I think in his head he said, man, I'm going fast. And they were. They went 45 and changed to the half.
They were cooking.
He knew he was flying. And he was like, you know what happened? Social media happened to him. In his brain, he said, I'm going fast. I'm going to get into a duel with a 40-1 shot. I'm going to get beat, and I'm going to get crucified for this ride. And I can't do it. So he takes back. And I know that Tom wasn't happy about that. But I at that point, what else was he supposed to do? You know?
I think you just got to go on with it and do your best to get the Ollie's Candy ride. I mean, if he had to do it again, I think that's what he'd do anyway.
So I think Cece got a good trip, but she was close to a fast pace.
You know, I thought she was close too, and now I'm looking at the chart, and she wasn't that close. It was a beautifully timed ride. You know, at the first call, she's four lengths back of fourth. So what?
Yeah, and I didn't go into depth with McCarthy about that because I was fearful that he probably had that conversation on Bic, and I'm trying not to have the same conversations as other people. So I didn't ask him really about it. But when we had a private conversation, he told me, he's like, do it. I couldn't see anything because the sun was like where I was. The sun was there, and it's a tricky place to kind of watch a race. And he said, I just saw where she ended up on the backside, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to win. Like, I can't believe she tucked in behind all those horses and like,
it was It was a really good ride.
Yep. Which Victor owed him that for the ride that he gave her, in the Acorn. the other thing that I'll say is that, the devil's advocate friend, my DA friend, he called with a conversation about Point of Honor. Because she did get squeezed at the start a little bit.
And that's not a race flow that's going to really hurt you that much to get a little squeezed at the start. When they're gunning, when they're running like that up front, it might help you to get squeezed at the start, frankly, as long as you don't get the wind knocked out of you.
Wait, his argument was that devil's argument, advocate, whatever. Devil's argument.
The DA. Well, I think just calling him the DA is pretty brilliant.
His DA was that she was 23 lengths out of it. She's never been that far out of it. That's not her running style. And I was like, yeah, but if she ran her running style, she would have finished ninth chasing that fast pace. Like, that helped her out. I'm not saying it was ideal. Maybe she lost two or three lengths because of the whatever, but that ended up working in her favor and helped her run third. And he felt like if she would have been closer, she would have ran better. But I
see it your way. I mean, I feel like getting, when you see those fractions all coded red in time form, and I haven't looked, but I'm assuming that's what we were looking at here. Getting left, again, as long as you don't get mauled, getting left can be good, you know?
So fast, Pete.
Yeah, I thought so.
Now, here's the thing. He did make a good point, but he made a good point. And this is an interesting conversation. They did go fast. So I called it a setup. Not a meltdown, because Ollie's Candy stayed on. Cece was close, stayed on.
Close-ish.
But my point...
Both of us thought she was close when we watched the race, but the chart tells another story. I guess I need to watch the replay again, but according to the chart, you would not say that she was close. You'd say that she got
a
perfect trip.
There's a difference to me between a meltdown and a setup. You know what I mean? Like, you can get a setup where the race shape was favorable to you and you got a good setup, and then there's a meltdown where the speeds all fall apart and in first, second, and third, were 9th, 10th, and 11th early. That's a meltdown to me. But a setup is you still got, they ran in front of you.
I'm a little bit in between on this one because I just think Ollie's Candy ran absolutely out of her mind. Because
yeah, she ran huge.
X that, I mean, the early leader, granted, at 1,000 to 1 was last. And then you got Serengeti, the early third, was, you know, fourth last. And, I mean, Ollie's Candy just really ran a big race. And then you look at where these horses were early on with Point of Honor and Street Band. And even, again, CeCe by lengths was farther back than I think either you or I thought, assuming the chart is accurate. It was starting to come apart a little bit. I think you got to call Ollie's Candy best, but, you know, obviously I'm thrilled that CeCe got the job done.
Sometimes I like to play this game where I like to see if our friends are listening. So we'll find out if that friend is listening about the DA. I'm going to put another subliminal shot out there and see if this one's listening. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Jonathan Kinchin is to Benny South Street. Like Michael McCarthy is to John Sadler.
Let's see what we can get out of that one. He was one of the people crabbing my nice Grunder comment, by the way. He was like, oh, Pete, I think you're losing it or something. No, I love the guy.
Yeah.
Come on. We got to be so negative.
McCarthy's burying Sadler. He beat him in the Pegasus. He beat him in the Breeders' Cup Mile. And he beat him right there.
Yeah, he's definitely a bit of a bete noir for sure. This had to be a tough one to swallow. Ollie's Candy did everything but win in this spot.
Oh, she ran so good.
Yeah, I mean, massive.
Phenomenal. She'll win a big race.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt.
She's a comforting moment for me, to be honest with you. She's a comforting moment when it comes to this wager that I wish I could get out of.
You're winning in it now, though. I mean, if you tried to just make it go away, I would assume you could get some money now.
Yeah, you know, but look, I feel like I'm in the right spot, right? You know, I don't know what's going to happen in California. CeCe is the Clement Hirst, the grade one, Del Mar, obviously, is somehow related to Bo Hirst, the owner of CeCe. So they're going to point to that spot. So if Serengeti Empress gets brave and goes out west, you got to deal with CeCe on her home court. And then also at Belmont, I don't know when the Ogden Phipps is going to be run. That's a one turn mile and a 16th. Give me Midnight Bisou all day long. So I feel like I got some ins and outs here. And then the personal ins is a mile and an eighth. Not that
Ballerina. Ballerina is where I think you're in trouble if you're in trouble.
Ooh, cutback. Ooh, yeah. And Kofefi. Kofefi, come out of retirement. Come on, there's got to be a sprinting filly that's going to save me here, no?
I don't know. I'd try to make it go away if you could put a little money in your pocket and you just say you got away with one there, personally.
But if I score out, if I hit a big pick six, I'm going to buy part of Midnight Bisou and run on the Ballerina.
I'm sure Jeff Bloom is eagerly awaiting your call.
Oh, I'm sure he would take it, too. Hey, Jeff, listen. Here's what we're going to do here. I know you got this filly that's worth like $10 million. I'm going to give you $70,000 for a 0.5%, and then I'm going to need you to run her where I tell you.
I would like to hear both ends of that conversation, JK. It sounds very entertaining. We're doing much more recap than I planned on, but we're having fun. That's how it goes sometimes on this show. Let's talk about the other stakes race, and this was one where, you know, totally of two minds. So as an analyst and bettor who was participating, so frustrating. As a fan of horse racing, so awesome. Whitmore getting his third Count Fleet. Would have been four if not for last Breeders' Cup Sprint champion. Matoli annexing the race in 2019. What did you make of this one?
Oh, it's like an idiot. I mean...
Were we wrong or were we unlucky,
no,
though?
I mean, look, Hidden Scroll has run two really fast races, okay? The slot debut and the last one. But I told you I think I even said this, funny enough, on our show we did last week. I have to get better at identifying how the talent. Okay, I believe in the figure in the final time, and that's an opponent that you beat when you run really fast. But when you earn it against lesser, it's easier to run faster when you're running against lesser. And I think that's what happened with Hidden Scroll. I think that he didn't have a stone in his in his way, so he ran fast. But when there's some some adversity, Paul Matisse calls it, when there's a scramble, he ain't winning. He can't win a scramble. And so, you know, he looked like he was going to win. He ranged up like a winner, and he just kind of fell apart. So Hidden Scroll, we'll talk about you another day when you come back and run on the turf. But I feel bad not talking more about that warrior that is Whitmore. I mean, I thought to myself in the middle of that race, why does Joe have Whitmore so close? He can't win from there. They're flying. And he ran just remarkable. He ran so good. He's an iron horse, a horse that I would love to own, a horse I would love to be. I'm so proud to be a fan of and to be able to watch run. Okay, now I'm going to pivot a little bit. Flagstaff was best.
Yeah, Flagstaff came from far out of it. It's interesting. It was not a race that was coded red. I thought it was a brilliant ride from Talamo. We were talking about this in text, and you said something like, well, you know, Talamo was maybe too close even. Maybe, you know, what's going to happen if that gets him beat? To me, even if being that close, even if moving as early as he did got him beat, those are the kind of sins, quote-unquote sins, that we're always encouraging riders to make. You know, you shouldn't. As an analyst, in my opinion, you shouldn't have it both ways and criticize the guy going too slow in the front. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to be in favor of aggressive riding, you should be in favor of aggressive riding. I thought it worked out brilliantly. But, I mean, I think you make a fair point about Flagstaff, who missed the break and didn't have the best of setups. Like, if this was a race that was all coded red, maybe I would have said, well, the margin was probably a little exaggerated, and Whitmore is probably a little bit better than the bear form suggests. In this case, I view them coming out of this race about equal, I'd say. You would view Flagstaff clearly ahead?
Yeah, ahead for sure. Flagstaff, he was 10th early, and I looked at the PPs because I had to talk about him on the show. He's never been further than 4th in his career.
Taken out of his game.
In that middle part of the race, never been, you know, further back than 4, and he's tactical, and
he was flying. He was flying.
Yeah, he was flying. So, you know, he's a half the game winner.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Another John Sadler second. A little bit of a frustrating day, but I guess even for a trainer, when your horses run that well, you got to be proud of him at the end of the day.
That's what he gets for beating me in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge with Accelerate. So maybe he'll think twice about that.
Oh my goodness gracious! Though, any others to comment on in here, or should we get? I think we might just do the one question that we had, the one question we were really excited about to round out the show. But
the Philly,
hit me with more of what you got.
The 3-year-old Philly division got a little bit more interesting on Sunday. Venetian Harbor obviously is the leader of that division, in my opinion. Dominic Savitas was always telling me that he was concerned about this Baffert filly that he had heard about, but she had 2 starts and ran second both times. Marinith, whatever. She galloped. Galloped in the last on Sunday at Oaklawn in the slop, like finally, like opened up and went on with it. So she might be all right.
I remember seeing the debut. I think I was on TV in Cali. Which day was that? Was that Sunday?
Yeah, she ran Sunday. I was going to look up her buyer. I'll look up her buyer.
I'll look up the time form. I've got the time form close, so I'll do time form if you do buyer.
Okay. Actually, I'm not going to look up the buyer. I'm looking up another figure. But
Marinith came back 113 on time form, which is, you know, roughly a 93 buyer. The other figure maker had it at what?
Fast.
Faster than 93?
Not triple digit, though.
Gotcha. So, you know, it came back pretty nice on the clock.
Sloppy racetrack going shorter. She might be better going longer. You know, American Pharoah out of a flatter mare. Yeah, you know. She won't run against, obviously, against Venetian Harbor's next start, which is probably going to be in the fantasy. Which is going to be in the fantasy. She's at Oaklawn now, Venetian Harbor. So she'll run in the fantasy next week. But I'm assuming they'll hook up somewhere along the way.
All right. We'll do 2 quick questions, 'cause there's one I think we can handle pretty easily. We had a question come in about the difficulty of hitting a pick four versus, I think the question had to do with making a manual parlay, just trying to back your four short-priced winners throughout a card. You seem to have a thought on this when we talked about it in the production meeting.
Hopefully everyone understands the question, but I'll try to. I learned this lesson betting football. I love playing teasers, and I like playing teasers because you get the 7 points in your favor. But the problem with the teaser is that you have to find enough games that you like. But I found this casino in Vegas one time that allowed you to keep open teasers. So you could do a four-team teaser, but you could use two games now, one game now, and leave three open, and you could fill them as you go, which is the point that I'm trying to make. It allows you to cherry pick the spots that you like rather than being forced to make decisions within a confined window of four races, five races, or one NFL day.
Great point.
And so I think the answer to the question is they're equally difficult. And here's why I feel that is because
equally difficult if you're talking about the same sequence.
No, both theories are equally different, equally difficult. Because in the pick five, pick four, when you're asking how complicated it is to hit a pick five or pick four, you get to have coverage. You can play a multiple of, you can play three or four horses in a leg. You can still spread in legs and catch things. Even if you're cherry picking your parlay spots with 3-2 shots, with 5-1 shots, with 2-1 shots, you're narrowing your opinion is narrowed to one horse winning. And so although you do get to cherry pick the spots, you get to pick the races you like, pick the races you have an opinion, you're not playing things that you don't like in a pick five sequence. The pick five sequence allows you to have coverage. So to me, without any math evidence, it feels in my brain, it feels equal.
It's interesting. My gut is that if you could just cherry pick and make a manual pick four over an unlimited course of time. In other words, like with your open parlay situation, that sounded a lot more like a place that accepts wagers in faraway places than it did a casino, by the way. But that notwithstanding, the ability to cherry pick, that is worth so much to me as opposed to being locked in. Plus, if you allow for the possibility that your parlay could involve some dutching, you know, a certain leg where you don't like favorites, you could play two, perhaps even three horses at longer odds and just divide up the money to keep that parlay going. That, in terms of level of difficulty, sounds easier to me. Of course, the problem is you got to pay the takeout then each time, whereas you're only paying the rake once when you're doing it in a pick bet.
Have you ever played that fun game that our friends at ABR have, that Stay Alive or whatever?
Stay Lucky.
Called? Stay Lucky. It's impossible, dude. You know me. I'm a chalk-eating weasel.
OldSmokeClothing.com. Use the promo code MONEY for free shipping.
I can't get past three on that thing.
Go to the partners tab in the money.
It's just hard. So, I like the idea of the cherry-picking parlay thing.
I think it would work a lot better in a fixed odds environment. I guarantee you it would work a lot better. I think the extra equity, in addition to paying the takeout all those times, to have that, you know, you just get crushed by the 5-2 shot going off at 8-5. You know, so I think in the real world, I don't know, maybe you're right. Maybe it's equally difficult because what you're getting and you're giving in each situation.
Yeah.
So we've gone all this way to give this guy no answer. I feel bad.
Well, I'm a fan of no answer when there's no answer.
Yeah, I'd rather give no answer than fake it. We've seen plenty of that in the world these days, and it's no good.
You need an Excel sheet and Marshall Graham or Eric Bielek to figure this out, or John Camardo. Like outside of that, I can't help you.
If you can bring John Camardo back from Hong Kong, man, it's all he wants to talk about these days. I was meant to get up early.
John Borman's doing some Hong Kong talk too. He texted this morning. Did you see his text this morning?
No, what'd he say?
He said,
"Oh,
I'm gonna add to it a little bit because he said I'm happy to announce that, that riders not going to the lead when they should is not unique to the U.S."
He was on the Naira show last week, and we did just completely spontaneously did the first 10 minutes on Hong Kong, just because that's where his head has been. And I was meant to, so I'm picking up a shift on Final Furlong next week, and we're going to be talking about this Champions night. We got three Group 1 races Saturday night. It's a Sunday morning at Hong Kong. I'll be chatting about on Final Furlong podcast next week with Emmett Kennedy. So I was like, oh, I'll get my feet wet today and I'll get up early and I'll watch Hong Kong with John and Sean virtually. And I slept in. So I missed it. But I'm hoping to at least wake up in the middle of the night and watch the three group ones so I can, you know, I always analyze better when I've watched the races live. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. What time does it happen in America?
I mean, I think it's going to be dead, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. Eastern. I think the group ones, I think the first race Saturday night is about 12:45. But I mean, you know, I can, if it's after 3, I could go to bed and early and wake up at 3 and just be done with it. That's my normal insomnia period. So just say the heck with you, insomnia. I'm just going to get up at 3 and whatever. I'll take a nap after the races. It'll be fine.
It would be fun to do like a Zoom.
Middle of the night.
Just because I want to do it. But I don't want to get up by myself and sit here in the dark, you know, in my underwear. That seems creepy. I'd rather like do it with friends. It'd be fun.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, that'd be. I mean, what else do we have to do? Jeez, you know.
Oh my goodness! Not as much that would be as fun as that. And I mean, the group ones are going to be awesome. So let's think about it. We'll talk about it. We'll see if we can throw something together. Okay, let's get to our other question, which I loved. This came from one of our UK-based listeners. We got a lot of new listeners from the UK. I've been doing a lot on Sky and the ratings over there. I know your ratings on Fox are nuts. You know, I think they're supposed to be up like 2-3 times. The ratings of Stateside in the UK are up 5 times. It's crazy because, of course, it's on East Coast Racing's on at a great time and we're the only game in town. Well, other than Hong Kong, but and Australia. But it's perfect for the punters over there. So a lot of people have been watching and wanting to learn. And we got a great, extremely specific question to take a look at a free time form US race of the day and just sort of go through and handicap it for the audience. So we're going to do this little experiment with a Gulfstream race that's happening tomorrow. It's race number 9. It's a good looking allowance race on the turf going a mile and an eighth. And we're going to try to do this, not just to tip a horse or whatever, but to do this in a way that will hopefully help folks be able to use the tool. Cause Timeform US, timeformus.com, they give away a couple of free races a day and the subscriptions are pretty reasonable in my opinion for the amount of data you get. And they are not a partner or sponsor in any way. This is just us being honest and trying to help out our listeners, to clarify that as well.
They sure aren't. I tell you what.
Yeah, that's another story.
We're gonna talk about this race. We're gonna talk about a couple of products from the place of the letters, but we also might just start getting real cryptic sooner than later if we have to. Well, I mean, I think some people might be looking at Timeform US for the first time, and so we're gonna do a for free tutorial. For free tutorial about Timeform US and how to use it and why we use it and what we like about it. So I think it's probably important to start. You should have the preview page, and on the preview page, it should be pretty much all blue. A majority of the page is blue. If you go down to the One Horse Temple, you'll see some check marks under their name. I don't know what that means. I don't really care what it means. You'll see the morning line there. You'll see the spotlight number. The spotlight number, from what I understand, is the figure they've run that's the most similar to this situation. So most similar to an allowance race, a mile and an eighth, turf, bah, 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 bah. That's the best number they've run. So if you're scrolling down, you're going to see that the One Temple, 117, probably the highest. You're going to see the running style. An average, that first number is their early pace average. That word in the middle is the type of runner that they've declared them to be. Mid-pack for the One Temple, tracker for the Three Opry, leader for the Five Thunder Ride. And then you're going to see their late pace. It's a rounded late pace, which I've never really loved because I want to know each race what their late pace was.
Yeah, they were supposed to add that. There was rumors years ago they were going to add that. I wish they had put in a proper LP.
I just call Sean Borman when I want to know what the LP is. For you'll see the jockey, obviously, the weight, and you'll see the trainer. One of the things that I love is I like to quickly be able to hit this preview and be able to see which horses are in for a tag if it's optional claiming. So if you look right here under claiming, you'll see that the 5, the 9, and the 12 are in for 62.5.
What does that tell you?
If you click on, there's the racetrack icon in the middle. It looks like a turf course. It says 4 plus allowance, 47K. There's a white box with a 115 in it. If you click on that, it will give you the conditions. So if you're new to us from a European standpoint, this is going to be Chinese to you. If you're from here, it's still going to be Chinese. For 4-year-olds and upward, which have never won 10,000 twice, other than a maiden claiming starter or state bred allowance, or which have never won 3 races or claiming price of 62.5. So all of that stuff before the last or, the horses that are in for 62.5, they don't qualify under that. So they've either won more than 3 races or they've won more than $10,000 twice other than maiden claim. You see what I'm saying? So I just want to know who is in with the back door, the last part of the condition.
Do you generally see it as an advantage to be in for the tag or a disadvantage?
No, I don't think it. I think it can be looked at as either.
Okay.
But you just need to know that it's there. Because you could have a 7-time winner that's in for 62,500, and these other horses haven't won 2 races in their life.
Right.
It's an important part you need to understand of how that horse is in and the other ones aren't.
Yes.
So that's the preview.
Not necessarily for this race, but in general.
Just in general. I just want to know. I want to know. That's the preview page. And then you can click on a horse. When you click on the one temple, your screen will change. You will then have a lot more white on your screen, and I don't mean race. So you'll have more white on the screen, and there's a lot of things going on here. You'll have the check mark. You'll have the check marks right under Temple's name in the white section. You'll have the check marks. You'll have the morning line, the odds. You'll have the equipment, the Lasix, the same running style thing that we talked about on the preview page. You go over to the right a little bit. You'll see the breeding, the starts, the record, all these things. Now, the most important thing about Timeform US to me is the pace projector, which is up in the top right corner where you'll see the 7, 8, the 11, the 5, 3, 2, 1, and a red box that says see details. If you click the red box that says see details, you're going to see in the top right corner of that dropdown, it will say fast pace. What Timeform is telling you is based on that early pace number, that running style number that we saw on the preview page and on the normal page, it's telling you that this race is meant to be run at a fast pace, so it's going to obviously help horses coming from off the pace.
And this is giving a snapshot, sorry to cut you off, but just to get, this little pace projector is a snapshot of where the horses are meant to be if they ran according to the previous numbers at the pace call. So that's going to be 4 furlongs in sprints and 6 furlongs in routes. And I agree, JK, this is where I want to start because that snapshot, especially on days when a racetrack is playing a certain way, it can just tell you so much about what's going on.
Right. And if you look at the bottom left, the first thing you need to realize is it says deep closers 10. It's saying that the 10 horse is such a deep closer that he doesn't even show up on this picture, which isn't a negative in a race like this where it has such a fast pace.
It's not great.
Now, no.
I don't think you ever want to be out of the picture. You know,
those
horses that end up, and I don't know, did this one get labeled as a plotter? I have noticed that in Timeform US, when they get labeled as a plotter, they often, that's horses that don't do their running typically until after the turn.
Right.
And it's just so hard in American racing.
Yeah.
You'll see ones be able to do it, but it's not easy.
So, and here's what I do. And this is just a trick that I like, and you do what you want with it. I like to look, if it's a dirt race, I don't give a darn what the pace says. If it's a dirt race, I always start at the front and work backwards when I start handicapping the race. Meaning I'll look at the 7 first, then the 8, then the 11, then the 5, 3, 2, 1, 4, 12, 9, 6. That's how I'll do it. Now, in turf races, I will listen to the pace and I will do it which situation
very interesting.
is set up for the pace. So if it's a fast pace, then I'm going to start from the back to the front. So I'm going to start with the 10 horse. Now, remember, this isn't that important, but if you look, I don't know what your screen looks like. It might be different than mine, so I don't know. It looks about right. Right next to the 4, Nipawa, there's a blue arrow. If you click that blue arrow, it takes you back to the preview screen. If you click the white arrow to the far right of Nipawa, it takes you back to the normal screen. Now, what I like to do is, really quickly, I look at the blue screen, I look at the preview screen, and I remember that the 117 is the spotlight number for the 1 temple. I want to put that in my brain, 117.
Because that's the high number.
High number. Now, I'm going to just quickly go through the horses that are in this race from the back to the front because the pace projector says the pace is fast.
So starting with the 10.
Starting with the 10. All right. The 10, 111, 90, 97, 106. Okay. Doesn't seem fast enough, and he's far back.
Another negative, JK. This one, yes, winning last time, you can see looking at the pace line of that race that it was coded red. In other words, yeah, the 10, Rijeka, got a setup. So a horse
it was a mile and a half as well. Now they're cutting back to a mile and a half.
So probably too sharp, probably no setup, no interest from me. Right. Barn so cold 10, as well.
Right. So 10 there. Then I'll go 6. The green Moster, great name. Mile 16th race, went 114 last time. First off a layoff. Okay, he fits. All right. Then we go to the 9, and I just do that. And I go through all of them, and I do the same thing. Then I go to the 12, Timmy M, 111. With a setup last time with the red figures. He was a vet scratch on March 29th. Not really feeling that. Okay, next race. Then we go to the 1, Temple, who's that horse that carries the high number. He's down on the inside. He's going to save ground. And I do that all the way to the front. So now I have this like really good feeling and picture about the race. And then I go back through and I handicap each horse like we're all accustomed to doing. That is how I use Timeform US. There's a couple of other things that you can kind of add to the mix. And I want to talk about those really quick. When you're looking at the 1 temple and you look at his first running line, you're going to see a camera, like a video camera, right above the words 26 days. Now, 26 days is how many days between his last start. It's very easy to use when you're on TV. It makes you look like you're really smart when you say 26 days. People are like, damn, he did all the math, and really you just cheated.
It is a great little feature, though, to be able to see that precisely. Because, you know, we look sometimes and it's second off a layoff or this or that when you're looking in the traditional form. Isn't it wonderful to just be able to look down and see how evenly spaced or not a horse's works a bit?
One of my favorite things to do, Pete, and I don't know if you've even heard me say this before. One of my favorite things to do is when I look at a horse, I look at this horse, Temple, he's coming in off 26 days, I scroll down and I look for something similar to see how he ran. All right, so 26 days, then 40 days, then 51 days, 29 days, that's similar, he ran third. 27 days, that's similar, he ran first. 55 days, 42 days, 38 days, 34 days, 27 days, he ran first. 42 days, 37 days, 49 days, 32 days, 37 days, 29 days, he ran second. So I like to...
He's run well before off this type of break.
Similar break, right. Okay, now, right under 26 days, you're going to see a number that says 119 for the 1 horse temple. This is a number that when people ask me, I can't really verbalize it. If you want to dig deeper, you can look in the how-to buttons, and there's a lot of explanation about that number, which is the race rating.
Relates now, to form.
You're right. On March 28th, they gave this race rating a 119 that Temple ran in when he ran second. If you look back to the top where I showed you to click on the conditions where the racetrack looking thing is in the middle of the page, there's a 115 up there. So that's saying that this race is a 115. Temple ran his last race, the race previous, and the race previous to that, 119, 119, 118.
He's been running against a hint better. Well against a hint better.
Right. Exactly. That's the assumption you want to make. I don't go to the bank with those numbers, but I use them as a guide. In North American racing, the conditions can be so tricky. There's, non-winners of 4 lifetime, unless you want to race before the pandemic, and then it not that that really happens, but
we'll see. That could be a condition eventually.
That could be a condition. So I look at that number just as a guide as well. And then if you keep going over, you'll see the jockey's name, Tyler Gaffalione. You'll go to the right a little bit more. You'll see the running line, 6 beaten 3 3/4, 6 beaten 4 1/2, 5th beaten 4, 4th beaten 3. If you click anywhere on those numbers, you're going to get another menu. And that menu is going to tell you, do you want the weight on or the weight off to be incorporated in the number? Do you want pace figures or fractions? I like pace figures. Do you want the pace figures or fractions of this horse or the leader? Do you want it adjusted times, official times, accrued splits, incremental splits? I'm not going to tell you what to do. Play with that like you want. I switch it up between this horse and leader depending on what I'm trying to figure out about a race. And I'm trying to think of a scenario in which I do something differently, but I just switch back and forth. So you can change that a little bit.
There are defaults in there. You can just stick with the defaults, right, or you can mess around.
Right. And then the last thing, there's two other things I'll say. If you keep going to the right, you'll see the 117 in green, which is the figure that that horse earned for that race on March 28th. To the right of that, you'll see the first horse was Largent, the second horse was Temple, the third horse was Tribhuvan. If you click on that, you should get another window that opens.
The chart view.
The chart view, exactly.
Which is a fantastic way to look at form.
Huge. March 28th, race 3. You'll see the race rating up there. You'll see all these things. Now, what you can do here is you can see what horses were running prior. And this is the worst race to give you an example. There's usually a black arrow. You play around with it, you'll find it. You can see what they ran after. So you can establish if that number was fast or not.
Just to pause on that, JK, because I think that might, I get what you're saying, but that might fly over people's heads.
Okay.
When you can see what the horses ran next time out, which that chart view will show you, it can give you a picture sometimes. Let's say every horse that came out of a race ran better. Maybe it was a better race than the number gave it. If every horse ran worse, maybe you're looking more at like a negative key race type situation. So it doesn't apply in this instance because nobody has run back from Temple's last race, but you can find gems when you look at that.
Oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do. And man, I'm telling you, you'll be shocked how many times you look at a race like Temple's last race, where you had a 117, and you do that, and there's been 6 horses that run back, and every single one of them is running 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 points slower. And you can just, like, it's the comfort you have, like, everyone's betting this number and the number was too fast, and you can toss the horse or downgrade the horse or fade the horse, and it's so rewarding. If I'm quick capping this race, right? Like, hey, who do you like in the 9th? I want to bet $20. Oh, you need my opinion? I'm going to just blast through it real quick. The 7 has some speed, and he has some nice numbers that fit. The 8 has some nice numbers that fit. He's a big price. The 11 is shipping in for Christophe Clement, has some speed, and outside post, should go forward. The pace projector says they're going to go fast. I believe they're going to go fast because there's 3 horses. They're spread out, 7, 8, and 11. They're going to go forward getting their position. Clement's got Jaramillo on, who's a guy that likes to get to the front. Okay, they're going to go off. Now we got the 5 here. He might be fast enough. Okay, maybe a little 5 there. Opry was a horse for Todd Pletcher that if you look at the 3, Opry, that horse had some blue pace figures. That's a little bit of a downgrade. Loose on the lead, was 8-5 last time. I'm
especially
going to fade him because he's not going to make the lead.
Exactly. Especially, JK, when you see a horse that's making the lead with blue numbers, and now you have a race where 4 horses are faster on the pace projector, and this one, you know, was only presumably getting it done with an advantage of going slow. I'm totally with you. That's a horse you'd want to fade.
And even if he makes the lead, it's even more reason they're going to go too fast.
Yep.
Okay, now we're at the 2 bird's eye views off 193-day layoff. Has he won off a layoff before? He came back off 160-day layoff at 10-1 and ran 7. He came in off 171-day layoff and won. okay, he can win. He can win. He's drawn down to the inside. He'll save ground. Give me the one and the two. I don't even need to look at the rest of them. You know what I mean? Like, you can, it helps you get through it quicker, I think, than looking at the old traditional form.
I love the one in here, Temple, because of the way that it plays out. This is a, you know, another great Mike Maker claim. This horse is a stakes winner. I think the horse is going to get an absolutely great trip with all the pace signed on. I love to see when the horse on time form with the best closing number is not all that far out of it on the pace projector, right? So, like, the other horse, I'm not sure, but I'm going to guess that the 10 that's off the picture has a closing number similar or equal to Temple. Temple has a number comparable and is, you know, approximately, what, 6 or 7 lengths off the pace. I absolutely
It's much better. Temple has an 86 early, and he has a 103 late. The 10 has a 42 with a 108.
Yeah. So you'd much prefer the Temple
numbers. Fast early and basically the same horse late. Yeah. So I just don't need that horse.
The other one I like in here, if it were to trip out for him, and you said positive things when you looked at him at first, Green Moster. I was a little interested at maybe at a price, especially if that horse drifts up over 10-1. This horse just fits and has the big closing numbers. What do you still, after looking at the race a little bit more, would you give Green Moster any count?
So here's one of my favorite things to do. I love Temple in this spot like you do. I like Temple a lot. If you notice, the Green Moster ran against Temple last time. If you're looking at the Green Moster, the 6th horse right now, you'll see the little camera. You'll see 26 days. You'll see the 119, March 28th. Let's click on the camera right there, and you can not watch the replay because for some reason – oh, right below it, you can – oh, you got to click the date. Sorry. Click the date, GP March 28th, and you can watch the race. And what I would do right here is I'd go 1-5, 1-5, 1-5, 1-5. Krampus was the – I'm sorry, not 1-5, 5-9, 5-9, 5-9. Temple was the 5 in the last race. The Green Moster was the 9 in the last race. And I would just watch it, and I would just keep my eyes on those two horses and see if the Green Moster had an excuse as to why.
Well, Moster was off a long layoff. I mean, that's one thing. Even if there wasn't a trip, you could give him credit for that.
But I want to keep an eye on the trip as well, though.
Oh, for sure.
Off the layoff makes a ton of sense. Drawn to the inside. You know, he'll be a much better price than Temple.
I picked Temple just because it's so hard for me to get away from well-drawn Maker, most logical winner with top jockey. But I can really see the case for Moster. You want to, hey, well, let's do it in real time. Watch the tape in real time and tell me what you see.
Oh, shit, I thought you were telling me. I thought you were saying you want to do a head-to-head. I was like, no, I don't want to do a head-to-head.
No, I'm not going to do that to you.
Let's see here. All right, okay. I'll tell you when they break from the gate if you want to watch along with me.
That's awesome.
They broke.
Tell people the race date. Make it easy for them.
Well, all they got to do is click that thing and they don't have to worry about
it. Oh, I guess you're right. It's a free race. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. So what are you seeing?
I am seeing that the 5 and 9 are both right next to each other in between horses. Okay. I got no information right now. They seem to be a little bit strung out, so they're running. The 5 is getting a great trip. The 9's getting a great trip too. So I don't really have a problem with what either one of them are doing. They're in the turn right now, and they're literally getting the same trip. The 5 is a little bit ahead of them. They're right in behind each other. They just kind of straightened up to the back stretch. I'm going to tell you when the half mile time posts, so you can try to mentally match where I'm at watching the race.
Timeform had this as just it's honest.
Up. The half mile time is up now.
Okay.
Literally same trip.
Yeah.
Now, I want to see who's on the lead. The 3, the 14, the 6, the 10. 3, 14, 6, 10. 3, 14, 6, 10. I want to know where they finish. 3, 14, 6, 10. Now, the 5 and the 9, they're still getting the exact same trip. Now it's going to start to change a little bit. The 5 is going outside. The 9 is staying inside. The 9 is probably one path inside of the 5. The 9 dives to the inside. They're literally running the exact same race. the five was finishing a little bit better.
Fitter.
I mean, the price differential that you're going to get, you know, a horse like the Green Moster is one that you probably want to take a look at. Rider Sticks. Horses, and here's the thing, Green Moster was 99-1 in that race where Temple was 6-1.
How much do you hold that against a horse, though? I know we've talked about this before. I don't like it. I don't like to bet the 99-1 when the next time they're 10-1, like Green Moster. Like, that's, it just like makes me itch a little bit.
Here's how I think about it, is no one in the McGoey barn thought this horse was going to run well. No grooms told their friends. No assistant trainers told their friends. McGoey didn't tell her friends. No one told anyone this horse was going to run well. He's 99-1, and he ran really, really well. Now he's going to come back. You got to think he's going to run better. Second off of a 317-day layoff.
I picked Temple. Look. I picked Temple for the Brits. I did this race. I'm talking about it tomorrow, but it was hard not to bet Green Moster. But you know, when you have to just pin your colors to one horse like I do there, it was too hard for me to go against the top connections. But it sounds like you think I probably should have. If you had to pick one horse in this race at the prices, knowing Green Moster is going to be three times the price, you would have done Moster.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was trying to give an example of like quick capping how I look at it. I never got to the six, so I feel like kind of an idiot. But in a contest setting or something like that, I'd use the six for sure. He's a much better price. Virtually ran the exact same race, you know, to a certain extent. And the thing is that Temple was, you know, second off a layoff. So Temple didn't really, you know, there's not a whole lot more room for Temple to improve, you know?
I think he's more inherently classy. Look, in the real world, we can Dutch these two. There's no real point to playing the head-to-head game when you don't have to, right? I feel like in this situation, you could have good equity in this race, playing against all the speeds and just, you know, Dutching 1-6. That's what I'd do in real life. But, I mean, that's not a play a lot of horse players would make, but I'm wired that way, and I have no problem doing it.
Yeah.
How about yourself? What would you do in real world?
I would look at the races surrounding it, the 8th and the 10th, see if I can do a pick 3, pick 2, you know, double, something like that, something where I can try to maximize the opinion. It's easier to me. It's easier, and the returns. Well, I don't know if it's easier. I feel more comfortable trying to run opinions together rather than double win betting the 1 and the 10 in a Dutch format. I'm sorry, the 1 and the 6. I see 10-1. I say 10. The 1, Temple, the 6, the Green Moster, instead of double win betting them in a Dutch format, I'd rather try to like hook them up in a double or a pick 3 with Dutch principles to really take it to the next level. Turn a 5-1 proposition into 20-1.
I didn't love either race around it though. So I think I've got my plan. Yeah,
12 claimer on the grass doesn't do you a whole lot of favors.
No, there's a lot of chaos.
You need a big dropper, and you can look at the morning line and know you don't have a big dropper. The starter allowance race before that, the 7 furlong, 3-year-old starter allowance race. There could be Timeform US. I know you guys
look competitive.
You're looking
me
at the free ones.
Yeah, it looked competitive to me.
Yeah, there's no real standout there.
When we parsed through race 9 the first time, JK, you mentioned liking the 2. The more I looked, I kind of thought it was between the 1 and 6. Do you still have any interest in the 2?
I mean, the 2 is interesting off a layoff, but that one of the things I was going to talk about for free, is looking at the DRF workout report. But it's at Tampa, so it doesn't. This horse worked at Tampa, so you won't know the answer to that question.
You wouldn't have that. I mean, in that instance, sometimes the tote can tell you a lot more than the workout report.
Yeah, but off a long layoff, you couldn't find an allowance race at Tampa. They're running ship. You know, the horse worked April 17th at Tampa, so to come down here, you know, you got to think the horse is a little bit well meant.
Yeah, running for
50% rider.
You're saying that because they're running for more money. But I don't know. Off the layoff against you know, Temple looks, you know, Temple's a stakes winner. And then we've made our points about Green Moster. And here's a horse that's 2 for 28 lifetime. I just don't think Bird's Eye View is going to be good.
I'd trade the 2 for the 6, but I don't think the 2's without a shot.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I wouldn't be in a hurry to lay the horse at, you know, double digits. So as far as that goes. All right. I mean, I think that was a pretty good little walkthrough. Anything else you want to, I feel like we highlighted most of the features that we use, honestly. I don't know that there's too much more to say about that. Any, you have any other thoughts to button it up, JK, or should we get out of here?
If you buy a time form, you buy like a nine, you know, whatever it is. I think the day is like $6.99 or something like that. If you buy it from listening to this, it's $3.50 for the track for one day, It's $5.99 for all the tracks. If you buy it, email, what's the email, Pete, that I can send?
To us?
Yeah.
I would just go to inthemoneypodcast.com and send us a comment. That's probably the easiest thing.
Oh, can you like attach a picture there?
That I don't know if you can do. I'm not sure. I've never actually emailed ourselves.
Oh, well, just DM us. DM us the picture. One of us. At UT Big Hair, at Looms Boldy. DM us that you bought it that day or whatever. You bought it, and we'll send two of you t-shirts of your choice from Old Smoke.
I like that.
One of our shirts.
Yeah, I've got a few sitting here. I probably won't be going to the post office for a while, but we'll get it taken care of one way or the other.
Shirt now. You're not leaving the house. You don't need a shirt now.
Wear it later. I don't know. A t-shirt's kind of perfect for these days, but that's a very cool idea. Other programming notes. Naomi Tucker's new show is up, talking to one of your buddies, JK. Have you had a chance to listen yet?
I haven't. She posted it while we were doing the show.
That would be impressive. Even for a multitasker like yourself, that would be very impressive. You do have headphones on. I assumed you were hearing from me, not Naomi.
I am. I'm excited, though. I grew up in racing, watching HRTV. So it's funny that Lafitte is my friend now, because I still look at him like, that's Lafitte Benkai from HRTV.
That's awesome.
You know, and from NBC and from whatever. Yeah. And so he's awesome, man. Such a great dude, and like such a professional. And him and Greg Wolf, both of them are just, they're remarkable at their job. That's all. I don't know if people understand how hard that job is, man. It's the balancing and the tightrope act that those guys do, with someone in their ear and directing the show and making all of us look smart. Those guys do a phenomenal job. So I'm looking forward to listening to it.
Keeping all the balls in the air. Yeah, Lafitte Benkai III. He's been on with us before. He's great. Nice man. Obviously grew up in the game. Amazing stories. Can't wait to check that out. Everything Naomi's been doing has been great. It's been terrific, JK. And while we have sort of hit pause on In the Ring for a minute, I feel like between what Naomi's doing and what you're doing on the one-on-one show, we're definitely scratching that industry itch, and it's great for regular horse players as well. I had a couple of other notes. Arkansas Derby coming up first Saturday in May. They're drawing early. I just wanted to highlight that for horse players. When are we going to have PPs for this thing?
Oof, that's an interesting question. We're going to have them. I don't know when, but we will have them.
Sunday, right?
Yeah, I think so. Probably Sunday night.
They're drawing Sunday, aren't they? I was just teeing you up to point out that they were drawing Sunday.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, my fault. I thought you were saying they're drawing early. You're right. Drawing early on Sunday, I'd assume Sunday evening.
I was just trying to let you be the hero and give people the good news, JK, but that's all right. That's what I get. I'm used to your insolence by now. And you're not my most insolent pupil, I have to say. That honor goes to the seven-year-old who tried to bite me in the middle of a lesson today. Oh, my God. I've never respected teachers so much. Let me tell you, folks. Friday.
I think you can bring back corporal punishment if it's your kid.
No. I can't. I don't have it in me. So Friday, and you'll hear I got a sound effect for this. Friday, that actually sounded really good. We've got the latest. I think it's our fifth horse player happy hour. And we have a wrinkle this week. As promised, we're going to have a prize for first. Actually, first and second, because we've gotten our friends at the Breeders' Cup to donate. Oh, this would be a good sound effect, too. It didn't quite work as well as I was hoping, the pouring beer sound effect. Gift certificate to the Breeders' Cup shop. $100 for first, $50 for second. Just a little extra something for the prize pool, and it'll also make it fun. Don't you think it'd be more fun rather than just talking about the top 18 who make it to whatever, to say, hey, we're actually playing for a top prize and the second prize here. All the money goes to Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. you know, we've been having so much fun just getting to hang out, you, me, and Matt Bernier, and a host of guests. And then to be able to do it for charity, it's been so much fun. So join us, $20. The proceeds go to charity, and that's going to be a good time. I don't know what time we start. Do you? You don't know, do you?
So I tweeted it. I think it's brunchy, right? So it's like
not that brunchy. On the West Coast,
two-ish.
But I mean, you know,
two-ish.
Happy hour starts earlier these days, JK. You of all people should know that.
Hey, look, what's the earliest beer you've had this whole time?
Weekends count?
Yeah, this is the earliest beer you've had in the last 40 days, 35 days.
Got to be like 11 a.m. Yeah, got to be 11 a.m. How about you?
I think when my girlfriend was here, I'm pretty sure I had a sip of champagne at 9, maybe.
Okay, you've got me beat. We'll see. We'll both break the records when we do our Hong Kong middle of the night situation. Assuming you'll go to bed before then, we can probably get started about 3 or 4.
Oh, I'm not that. I can't stay up that late.
Yeah, we'll go to bed and we'll wait. You wake up and have a beer. You're a big boy. You can handle it.
Oh, don't challenge me. No doubt.
There's so many reasons I love barbecue, and you know I'm scared to make barbecue for people from Texas, as I'm sure I've admitted to you before. But not the least reason to get into barbecue, like proper barbecue smoking as a habit, is the only excuse I know to have a beer when you've woken up and it's 6 a.m. I'd had beers before in my life when I'd stayed up till 6 a.m, but waking up at 6 a.m, excuse to have a beer, you need yourself a proper smoker.
You've just never set it off in Vegas. When you're getting after it in Vegas for 4 days and you try to go to bed early, but it's 2:15 when you go to bed and your flight leaves at 6 and you got to wake up at 4:45 and you need something to take the edge off.
I could see that.
You get into the mini bar and you drink the Heineken or whatever it is just to get a little bit drunk, to get on the plane, to fall asleep. And then when you get home, you can just crash out.
Hopefully not that. All right. So we plugged Friday. I think we're down to the final topic for today, which is a horse at Gulfstream. I'm very excited to bet on Saturday, though. I heard a rumor he might eventually be running at Radnor in a hurdle race. Our Ninja JK, named after you, and of course referencing your profound love for American Ninja Warrior. What are you hearing about this runner, JK, this son of uncaptured out of Dottie's a hottie by Flatter? What are we looking at here? It is good jump rating.
Look, Double R is not shy. He's never been shy on these airwaves, so I'm not going to be shy for him. Rich Averill, we were hanging out quite a bit at in Vegas during the NHC, and we were probably having we were eating at Scarpetta, where we went 4 nights in a row.
Where you now owe him, by the way, a dinner based on your last joint appearance together for that Tampa show. Do not try to get out of that the way you've gotten out of the multiple bottles of Lagavulin you owe me.
Well, you're going to pay for half of Scarpetta now that you brought up something that could have been forgotten.
That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
We were there, and he told me. This is what he told me. And he, all of this is with love, by the way. He told me, he's like, man, I've had so much luck with horses that I name after my black friends. I'm dead serious. That's what he told me. He's like, oh my God. We got to name one after you. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And so he said, he let me pick what I wanted to name it. It was either going to be R-U-T. it was going to be R-U-T Big Hair. Or it was going to be our Ninja JK.
Oh, my God.
And we went with our Ninja JK. Now, look, our Ninja, he started off a little bit slow. He is a four-year-old. He's a four-year-old making his first start in a maiden 12. Start off a little bit slow. But it sounds as if he's kind of turned the corner a little bit. So, I mean, Double R is the king of the turf sprint. I don't mind a turf sprint myself. We're drawn inside. We get Jaramillo. I don't know for sure. I will tweet. If there's gas, I'll tweet. I don't know for sure yet. But we're going to watch, and we're going to root. And the sad part is, if the world was normal, I would be on a plane. I've never had a horse named after me. So this is like the first time. It's pretty cool. I'm excited about it.
That is very cool. It's going to be fun. Definitely a highlight. So that is the first race at Gulfstream on Saturday. What time does it go, JK?
12:45 Eastern, 11:45 if you're from the great state of Texas.
So we're going to start early. We're going to start there. We're going to end up at Hong Kong Saturday night. This is going to be quite a day. I better replenish the beer supply before then. And I think we got...
You better at least make one ticket where you single our Ninja JK. Don't... Look, you can handicap the race. If you like other horses, that's fine. But I want this to be the... I want this horse to be 1-5 in the pick five.
I will point out too, JK, that you know while you are a huge fan of American Ninja Warrior, you are, according to the Saratoga Ninja Lab, you are now officially too old to try to run the Warped Wall. You have to sign a waiver if you're over 35 and you want to run the Warped Wall because they think that's how likely you are to explode your Achilles tendon.
You know, I thought about that today, Pete. Honestly, and I'm not going to go down a sad path, but. Man, I worry this summer that I worry about.
We'll see what happens. It's one day. I'll give you a pep talk, and this is a pep talk for the audience too and myself as well. It's one day at a time, folks. We're going to figure out what's happening, and we're going to deal with it, whatever it is. And if we get a year where we don't get to do everything we want to do, and, you know, that just, you know, it's the price you pay for keeping, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans alive. Let me do one quick little side rant because I've seen this incredibly irritating like meme out there, and I just want to address it that you know, folks, I've seen folks point out like the average flu death in the USA, which the average is actually way lower, but a bad year is like 80,000, right? And yeah, if we continue to do everything right, and that's a big if, there's a very good chance we could keep what's happening now below what a really bad flu year is. But you got to remember, folks, that's with everybody staying inside and doing what we're doing for 6 weeks. If people were out there going about their business as normal, the exponential way these things explode, it would be absolutely ridiculous. Well, we're doing the right thing, and we're making sacrifices, and whatever, we don't know the extent of them yet. It may get worse before it gets better. It probably will, but it's got to be done.
The other thing is, and I've only made one political tweet, and I don't really feel like going down that path again because I already had to block like 7 people, and I have all these guys on the no bet list now. I don't want to deal with that again. They don't have any item at your local Walgreens or Duane Reade or CVS. You go in, there's a little red box that doesn't say Tama Corona. There's a Tama flu, right? They have treatment for the flu. They have a vaccination for the flu. They have a lot of different things about the flu that we don't have for this other thing, right? It's not the same thing.
It's not the same. I mean, it's not even close. And, you know, I'm sensitive because I've got, as I've mentioned before, first responder close to me.
Very close to you. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you're not saying it, and that's fine, but like as close as someone can be to you, that's not your wife or your parent.
Yeah. No, it's people know my brother's NYPD, and then we've got an emergency room doc in the building here who we spend a lot of time with. So it's the report from the grounds here. It's, if anything, it's worse than what you're hearing, not better. But I think the news is doing a pretty good job of painting the picture. But anyway, so I'm not saying we're going to miss out on being up there in August. But if we do, it's for good reason, and we'll be back. We will get through this, no doubt about it. And I forget how we even got onto this topic, but I do just want to leave with a positive message. We're just going to, you know, like all the really, really difficult things I've dealt with in my life, the answer to how to deal with them is it's all the same. You know, whether it's health scares or grieving or whatever it is, it's one day at a time. And it's focusing on what's right in front of you. And if we can help in any way to focus you on the racing that fortunately is able to continue, you know, that's a good thing.
And I'll tell you this, talking about leaving on a good note, my son threw an out and up today in Madden. for a touchdown, I almost cried. he set this grown man up with throwing an out route the entire game into the boundary, And when it mattered on third and four, and this guy thought he was smart, and he tried to sit on that out route, and my son double moved him for a six pack, I literally said it's all worth it.
Not really.
I cried a tear of joy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad you guys are getting to do your hanging. And as much as I've been moaning a bit, I suppose, about the teacher thing, but there are great aspects. It's hard as heck, but there's great aspects to it. And you know, I mean, what's the old, I think for parents particularly, the line to remember, and I really believe this, and I don't mean to be glib about it, but the idea that lost money can be earned again. Lost time is gone forever. And that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. Thank you, JK. Thank you to our sponsors, including Keeneland Select, and of course, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and 10 Strike Racing. We'll be hearing more from them next week. Most of all, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, especially all of you who have sent nice notes. People seem to really be digging these Friday happy hours. Get involved. Go over to horseplayers.com and sign up and play to help out TRF and the TAA. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kitchen. He's been earning that title lately. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.